This podcast series is brought to you by Hyundai. Hyundai is building a better world for tomorrow by aiming to neutralize CO2 emissions at all stages of production and operation. Hyundai is working toward carbon neutrality by 2045. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Now that Magna's really taken a front seat, customers are pushing, investors are pushing, employees are pushing, I think it's become more and more of our everyday language and our discussions and our KPIs. And the last 2 to 3 years, particularly the last year, has been a significant incline in trying to meet the sustainability requirements.
And does that make your job harder?
It makes it more fun, I would say, to begin with.
Solving hard things is fun.
It is, that too.
The auto industry's role in solving this hard thing, the problem of a warming planet, is so often looked at through the lens of the major automakers and their products.
General Motors is aiming to go all electric.
Every Toyota car sold in Western Europe will be zero emission models by 2035.
To quote the great Marsha Griffiths, it's electric. That's what Ford would probably say if you were to ask about its future.
But that's really just one thread in a much larger and more complex web that is the auto industry. Underneath each automaker, there are multiple Tier 1 suppliers. For many of those Tier 1 suppliers, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of their own suppliers, all with their own manufacturing processes, materials, and environmental impacts. According to the Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor, Michigan, for each assembled part, the supply chain can go 10 or 20 levels deep. And the car or truck at the end of that long chain, it's got those carbon footprints all over it. How in the world do you get a handle on all that? How do you measure it? And what are companies doing, if anything, to cut their impact? It turns out many of them are doing a lot, and they are trying to measure it. This is Driving to Zero, the automotive industry's roadmap to carbon neutrality. I'm Jake Neer of Automotive News, and on this episode, we're digging into the impacts, the innovations, and interest of suppliers. Today, Automotive News Executive Editor Jamie Butters and I are at Magna International's Plascoat facility in Brampton, Ontario, which is near Toronto. Here, they make injection molding products that the company sells primarily to the Detroit 3 and Toyota. They include plastic metal hybrid parts to help with lightweighting vehicles, active grille systems, and all of the standard exterior parts you'd find on cars and trucks. Our tour guide has been at the plant for about 10 years.
I'm Paul Rodriguez. I'm the general manager here at Plascoat. And we have 450 employees here, approximately 200,000 square feet, and 40 injection molding machines. All right, so we'll start here on the shop floor. We'll open these doors.
So other than the loud noise of the injection molding machines, one of the first things you notice when you walk into the shop floor are large screens that display all kinds of information for employees to see. And a lot of it is related to how much energy the plant is using at any given time.
We're going to move in here behind us and we'll look at some of our metrics and what we display on these TVs. And I'll start here on this side here. And you'll see our group targets set up by Magna with respect to this is carbon neutrality. This is our energy Kaizen workshops where the employees are here engaged in a project. These are our high level metrics when it comes to carbon neutrality, energy reductions, gas reductions, water reductions. And then there's a guideline that we call MAFACT, which we're responsible for meeting a certain level, a certain number. And here you can see we're scoring green pretty much across the board. Carbon neutrality we're still working on.
And for people listening who can't see this, these are all things that are displayed on these big screen TVs in the plant at all times.
Correct. So the employees, when they come to work, these are screens that we try to educate them on, and they're seeing how we're doing. When they go for lunch or when they go to the washroom, they can again see how we're doing. This is all live information.
Paul then explains to us that Plascoat participates in an energy auction program. He says the province of Ontario might have a situation where it has an excess amount of electricity, and neighbors, such as New York State, might need more extra electricity that they just can't produce. So the program asks Magna and others to reduce their energy use and share power with neighbors that they can't produce for themselves. Paul walks us over to another set of screens, the building's automation system, which Paul calls Plascoat 4.0. It turns out we were there on a great day to see the program in action.
It just so happens today's an auction day. So here we go. So at any given time, we can tell how much electricity we're using. Here you can see we're using around 3,200 kilowatts at any given time. And you can see here today there's an auction, so I have to drop this by 400 kilowatts in order to participate in the auction program. This allows us as well to see how can we move our production, say from a day shift that uses a lot of high expensive electricity, and we'll move it to the night shift where electricity is cheaper.
And what does that mean for Magna? Are there incentives involved?
Yes, there are incentives. So we work with Electra, who, if we meet that certain amount of deviation, that 400 kilowatts, then we get an incentive.
Again, this plant is 200,000 square feet. It requires work trucks to get around, move materials, and keep the workflow going smoothly. As of this visit, those work trucks burned fossil fuels. But by the time you're hearing this, that won't be the case.
One of the other big initiatives that we're working on is eliminating our use of propane or gas fork trucks. So next week, we have a whole new fleet coming in here, which is going to go fully electric. And again, that eliminates our emissions for gas.
At this point, Paul moves on from the high-tech, expensive-sounding stuff to what I can tell he's more excited to talk about, the smaller things that he says create a culture of sustainability in the plant.
So yesterday, we had an energy hunt. And the hunt was looking for air leaks, and it was looking for oil leaks, and it was looking for water leaks. But we had to educate them in the amount of energy required to make compressed air. It's a significant amount. You wouldn't think, you wouldn't even know. But when you walk around, you start to listen to those air leaks, and in a factory like Plascoat, there's a significant amount of air that we use. And when we educate them, then they start doing the hunts, and then we start tagging those air leaks. And then we can go after those and start fixing them. Small things, but they add up.
Paul talks about how Plascoat gives employees incentives to find other ways to save energy around the plant. He talks about how an employee suggested turning off a conveyor belt that moves vanes for active grill systems in the time between every vane that's made. That's instead of having the belt run constantly while the machine is in use. It might sound small, but Paul notes that they make 14 million vanes a year. Again, the savings add up. Illustrating this point about the culture Paul is trying to build at the plant is a massive wall around a break room with the faces of workers all over it. "We are Plascoat," it reads. We now move outside the building to an area that's particularly exciting for me.
Some employees got together and put together these gardens for us. We got them engaged. It was a fun day. Each of them brought in some of their vegetables that they like to eat, so onions and tomatoes and peppers and so on and so forth.
So you swear to me that you didn't just create this week because Jake is coming. He is an avid gardener.
I am, really. Yes. This is my favorite part of the tour so far, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And Paul isn't done there. He's got even more for this avid gardener to nerd out about.
Okay, so we'll head down to the beehive.
All right.
When you first said that you put in a beehive, I thought, oh, is that some sort of like message board for ideas? And everybody puts their Kaizen idea, like a Kaizen beehive or something.
What I was picturing was some big piece of machinery that, I don't know, captures emissions or something. Like, oh, this sounds interesting. But it's a literal beehive.
It is. So one of our employees, he's a beekeeper. And he came up with the idea of engaging our employees with and educating them on beehives. So the beehive itself is maybe 4 or 5 weeks old. And I believe in the winter, we're adding more hives. Mm. Believe it or not, there's 1,500 bees born every single day.
Wow.
Yeah. The queen is busy.
Okay. You might be thinking, one beehive, a few raised beds. What exactly does this have to do with the massive problem of climate change and or the auto industry's gargantuan shift to carbon reduction?
We just have a division that also has a produce garden. And this year, they marked the anniversary of donating over 600 pounds of food to the local food bank.
That's Ahmed El-Ghanzouri, Director of Sustainability for Magna International.
We have a pretty sizable bee program throughout Magna. In Europe, we have a goal to increase the bee population in Europe by 10% in 10 years. Hmm. Magna is quite a decentralized structure. So what we've done is we've set up kind of where we want to go, which is kind of decarbonization. So we've set the targets, and really we let the divisions run with it, and they know their business best, and they kind of get to, as you've seen today, put in the right projects at the right time to hit the targets. So for example, this year we have a 10% energy intensity reduction from last year. So in 1 year, reduce your energy reduction by 10%. And here at Plasco, we're on track to hit that.
Ahmed says Magna is trying to account for its decarbonization through the Science-Based Targets Initiative, or SBTI.
So Magna has signed up for the near-term commitment, which means 38% reduction in our Scope 3 by 2030 and a 46% reduction in our Scope 1 and 2 by 2030.
If you can remind us again about the scopes.
Sure. Scope one is kind of the emissions coming from on-site. So that's when you're burning natural gas right on-site. So that's your comfort heating and cooling, natural gas uses in operations, in your paint ovens, etc. Scope two is coming from your electricity usage. And then scope three is kind of everything else. There are 15 categories. The big one, they're usually going to be supply chain, the use of your product, and everything else, to employee travel, commuting, et cetera.
And just recently, Magna also updated its own carbon emissions goals. The company announced in late August that it aims to achieve net zero globally by 2050. Ahmed says there are lots of reasons Magna has been on this path to cut its carbon, from expectations from its investors, its customers, and its own employees.
Magna has always been focused on waste elimination and reduction. So it's kind of been part of that core value. But it's also being pushed from, I'll say, all factors. Our employees are asking, what is our carbon footprint? What are we doing in sustainability? Our customers are asking, our stakeholders, our community. So really, it's kind of being a good corporate citizen. But also, we know it's the right thing to do. And the earlier we start on this journey, the quicker we can get results and show our commitment.
He says it also just makes good business sense.
Right now, energy is, in terms of cost and price, is quite volatile. So I think it's also a business risk issue right now, both for the procurement of energy and making sure that you've got what you need to operate into the near-term future, and as well as switching to renewables, both from a business case and also from a knowing that it is what we kind of need to do to hit our decarbonization targets. And I think we've got that buy-in. I think most of our leadership and here in the plant understand that this is kind of a core part of Magna's values now.
So Jamie, this was a really fascinating trip for me. I mean, I'm not in supplier plants very often at all. Okay, I've never been in a supplier plant before. So this was definitely a learning experience. You know, the thing that Paul showed us that actually stuck in my mind the most were vents, surprisingly. You know, there were so many big pieces of technology, advanced machinery that Magna and Plascode is using to reduce its energy consumption. But, you know, these metal pipes, or ducts, if you will, ducts with a CT, not a CK.
Right.
You know, on one side of the plant, you have these machines that are producing a bunch of heat. On the other side, you have the loading bays with these huge doors. And mind you, we were in Canada. You know, this is the birthplace of ice hockey, home to 16,000 polar bears. It gets cold for many months of the year, and that cold blows into the factory, making things pretty uncomfortable for the workers. So here's what they did.
And if you look above you, you'll see what we call these socks. Those socks take the heat from this highly concentrated injection molding area, and it sends it down to the back of the factory. And then we recirculate that heat. We use these big fans, we've got them all over, and it recirculates that heat back into the factory, which allowed us to eliminate and altogether the usage of gas. to heat the building during those very cold winter months. So employee idea, we thought about it. We decided to partner up with Enbridge. We got a rebate from Enbridge, and of course reduced our electricity tremendously, which also helped us with reducing our scope one emissions.
So basically you have all this heat that you're already generating. Why would you generate any more heat, right?
Exactly. And why don't we use it for some good use to allow for some comfort heating within the building.
Very interesting.
And here's what Ahmed had to say about that as well.
You know, who would have thought that you could eliminate the need for natural gas for comfort heating? But you know, here's one division that was able to show that. And then we're able to take that and then amplify it so much more with our over 350 divisions globally. So you've got all these different divisions piloting something, and then we're able to kind of replicate it and move on and replicate other ideas here as well.
So I think the reason that this part stuck with me so much was that it's kind of a simple solution. I mean, you take the heat that you're already producing and you just move it somewhere else. And it sort of also made me think of how this effort on the part of Magna to build this culture around environmental consciousness can yield results that don't necessarily depend on technological breakthroughs. You know, just having these things in the back of your employees' minds can actually move things in the right direction.
Yeah, I think similar for me, you know, what was exciting was that so many of the energy saving, cost saving, you know, planet saving efforts came from the frontline workers themselves. It wasn't a bunch of engineers coming in to try to redesign things in a complicated way. It was them scouring their own work areas for the leaks in the water, the leaks in the air, the wasted energy. I started out covering Toyota and their factory in Georgetown, Kentucky. And the idea of the continuous improvement actually coming up through the system from the people who, you know, put parts together or actually run machines on the line, when you can harness all those people's energies, you can really move the needle.
And that's interesting to me. I mean, I want to know if you, with that experience in mind, had a similar reaction to me. To be honest, when, you know, obviously you saw I was geeked about the gardens and the beehives and things like that. And even talking about the energy hunts and the leaks and things like that, I was still thinking in the back of my mind, like, this seems really small. You know, there are the big things too, but like, you know, why are we talking about these things? Did you have the same reaction to me?
Probably not. Just because, you know, when you get used to those large numbers that you see in the industry, right? Toyota makes 10 million vehicles a year. The worldwide industry makes, you know, 90 or 100 million vehicles a year. And so if you can make something a little bit better, if that knowledge gets spread, it makes things 100 million times better. And it's the same sort of reward system for cost saving that, you know, automakers, engineers, suppliers, everywhere up and down the value chain, if they can find just little one penny savings, it really adds up.
Mm. Were there any other things that stuck out to you while we were in Brampton that you thought really sort of highlighted what we're trying to get at?
One of the things that was really interesting to me as the science has progressed over the, you know, quarter century that I've been doing this, you know, it used to be a big deal that Toyota and later, you know, GM and others would have these big boards up on the wall so you could see, well, where was there a problem in manufacturing? How were we running against the plan for today? And just being able to actually share, you know, real performance with the workers as they're working, you know, lets you feel like you're connected to something and there's a point to it all. And what was so amazing to me, in addition to those kinds of things that are already part of it, and they had the screens with data, was, you know, Paul Rodriguez checking his phone just compulsively, like like a stock trader checking their portfolio. He was constantly checking how efficiently are the machines running? You know, where are we losing power? Where are we wasting water? Is anything seem out of line? And the idea of that constant monitoring, you know, from management through, you know, the workers on the line, I think is really interesting and shows sort of the progress and the evolution that technology is supporting.
What Jamie just said there really highlights the kinds of technology and resources major suppliers such as Magna have at their disposal now to tackle this issue of carbon emissions. But what about their suppliers and their suppliers' suppliers? these much smaller companies are far more constrained in this area. And when we come back, we'll look out across the broader landscape of suppliers and their efforts to cut emissions.
Hyundai's vision, Progress for Humanity, is based on a determination to ensure universal mobility while supporting a carbon-neutral society, with plans to electrify the entire vehicle lineup and over 20 years of research into hydrogen technology. Hyundai is leading the way for change toward a more sustainable world. Hydrogen, in particular, is a crucial component of Hyundai's carbon neutrality efforts, and it's more than just an alternative fuel source for passenger vehicles. From production, storage, and distribution to hydrogen use in trucks, public transportation, ships, urban air mobility, and beyond, Hyundai is invested in establishing hydrogen as a widely used energy across our entire society. Hyundai is committed to building a better world for tomorrow, and the future of hydrogen has never been more promising. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
The Daily Drive podcast brings you all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry. I'm Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News.
And I'm Kellen Walker. We give you all the top stories each weekday and interviews with experts like Mike Dunn explaining Jeep struggles in China.
How bad did it get? As recently as June, sales of Jeeps in China. Can you guess the number, Jamie?
Oh, gosh. Was it four digits?
It was one digit. And the number was one.
Listen and subscribe to Daily Drive at autonews.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Driving to Zero. I'm Jake Neer. This entire podcast project started over a year ago when Automotive News editor Lindsay Chappell pitched an idea in one of our news meetings that got my mind turning. He shared a story about a conversation that he had with a major supplier in Europe that got him and his team of reporters thinking about how massive this shift to carbon neutrality had really become and the lengths at which automakers and suppliers were going to meet their targets. The result of this was a fantastic package of print stories in Automotive News called Carbon is the Enemy, which came out earlier this year. Jamie and I spoke with Lindsay about his inspiration for that project and why it's such a critical topic today.
The thing that caught my attention, I was at the Paris Auto Show back when there used to be a robust Paris Auto Show. And I was talking to the CEO of a major European supplier, and he was doing a presentation for the audience on how his company was going to work more diligently toward a greener earth as a manufacturer of parts that he and his company were going to find new solutions. And I engaged him afterwards and said, well, what does that mean? You know, how much can you do? And he said one of the things that would be necessary is that materials that they were buying as a French company from companies in East Europe, you know, that maybe didn't make sense in terms of reducing carbon emissions to be making an effort at a factory in France using materials that had to be put on a diesel truck and driven across three countries. And I said, well, what are you saying exactly? Are you saying that you might ask that material supplier to close down that factory and move production closer to you in France? And he said, yes. And I thought, well, this is serious stuff. This isn't just, you know, companies talking about getting better gas mileage. This is something that can have huge effects on the whole production base of the global auto industry. And what we're starting to see now is that that's happening, that manufacturers are changing all sorts of things. They're changing the materials they use. They're changing the production processes. They're changing logistics and how things are handed off from one customer to the next.
Well, Lindsay, that's such a profound change. I mean, for a long time, a lot of what manufacturers did, especially of big complicated things like automobiles, was look for lower cost labor. And you would move work to, you know, Mexico or Romania or, you know, Ukraine and Southeast Asia and all these places where labor was really cheap. And now, so to have this shift in priority to, well, maybe we want to be lean and we want cost savings, but we also want a leaner carbon footprint.
Yeah, that's right. And it does sort of put a little cloud over, I would think, the future of some of the supply chains that are stretched out over thousands of miles. I don't think the future will tolerate it. Now, you know, the auto industry is spectacularly resilient. And when you tell a company that they're going to lose their business, they suddenly can find all kinds of alternative ways to do what they've been doing. So the solutions, I'm sure, will creep out of the floorboards, you know, still making it possible to do this. I'm just saying that the winds have changed and companies now have to go into their customer and say, here's how we are now offering you a greener product.
One of the things that was really interesting in that package of stories was how, look, we do have a new administration. Mm. We have one that takes climate change and global warming very seriously, but we haven't had a European-style, really regulatory regime to drive these changes. It's, you know, President Biden has certain goals. He would like to see the U.S. improve in carbon emissions and such things, but it isn't being mandated through regulations. It's been this business-to-business demand and sort of peer pressure and supply chain pressure.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great point. That you don't have regulations around your neck that tell you we've got to do this and you've got to have X percent of that and reduction of this and that. It's a very inspiring situation in the U.S. industry right now that companies are making these enormous changes because they're being asked to by their customers. It's a business view that here is how we're going to operate in the future. Everybody has constituents. General Motors has shareholders, and you know, Magna International has shareholders, and they also have employees. Their employees are constituents, and their customers are constituents. And all of these businesses want to be perceived as an entity, a commercial entity, a manufacturer that's doing things right. And the flip side of that penny is you do not want to be perceived right now as a company that's doing things wrong. You do not want to be the oblivious guy in the room.
Well, you know, Jake and I went to a Brampton plant, the Magna plant in Brampton, Ontario, and they talked a lot about the importance of, you know, being sensitive to the environment as a recruiting tool for employees. Employees care very strongly that the company they work for is not, you know, doing evil. And, you know, it's hard. People got to work. They got to make money. A lot of manufacturing by its nature, you know, it consumes energy and it throws off waste as well as, you know, finished products that are valuable to people. And so it's been, you know, it's really interesting that that was such a high priority for them.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine, we all know, we've talked about this for a long time now, is how difficult it has become to hire anyone for anything. I mean, to hire someone to work at your fast food restaurant or someone to work in your design house or someone to work in your factory. You can't be the company that refuses to go along with the direction of making the world a little bit better and expect that you're going to hire those people.
They did some of these, you know, big things with moving air and a lot of little things to plug leaks and, you know, save money, you know, keep from wasting energy or water or whatever else. But they weren't just up on big screens or like the old Kanban boards that we used to see in the old days. But they also have smartphone apps. They can really track a lot of their energy usage and other metrics on their smartphone apps. It's pretty remarkable.
That is crazy. And it is worth pointing out it's happening because now it can happen. You know, that you have seen so much advancement in the in smart factories, and you can see that you have a machine that's kicking out too much heat. And you can observe it all in real time. And that's, you know, that's been an enabler to this. It's not just somebody dreaming and saying, boy, that's too bad we can't do that. Well, here's a tool that will enable you to do it.
This couldn't happen 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what you just said is, you know, you saw a spectrum of efforts there at Magna, ranging from big to little, and, you know, making the workers and the plant aware of the results and seeing it up above them on display. Everything from big to little, and I think that's the nature of what you're saying. That it's not just the truly big things like the rollout that we're going to see in the next couple of years toward green steel, steel that requires no coke in the processing of it. Big things like that. You also see lots of little things, like how much water are we using at this plant? Is there a way to use less water? How much waste are we creating having 1,000 employees in one site? You know, can we reduce our own waste? A lot of things like that all over the industry.
You know, and one of the things that our reporter, John Irwin, pointed out in his reporting for this package was that, you know, all that technology that the three of us were just talking about that we see at Magna and others, a lot of the other suppliers down the supply chain don't have that kind of technology. They don't have the ability to even track what their carbon footprint is. Even if they wanted to know, how would they?
They don't. He nailed it there. Is when you get out of the multi-billion revenues field, you're talking about something that may be cost prohibitive in the past. I think it might be more common going forward that we will see that. The tools exist that will allow it. They probably, in many cases, have simply never been asked for. This is a new thing. This is a ball that's just begun to roll. And I don't think we could take a snapshot of where they stand in 2023 and expect it to be the same in 2025 or 2028. It's going to keep evolving.
So, Jamie, our conversation with Lindsay reminds me of another thing that really stuck in my mind when we talked with Magna's Director of Sustainability, Ahmed El-Ghanzouri. When we think about who's keeping who honest when it comes to their carbon footprint, we often think about what automakers are doing, keeping tabs on their tier one suppliers' emissions, or what tier ones are doing, keeping track of their suppliers. You know, that scrutiny is directed down the supply chain. But Ahmed told us that it actually goes both ways, at least for Magna.
There are 15 categories in that scope three emissions. One of them, the big one, is supply chain. But another one is called process of your product. So when our products go to an OEM and they're being processed into the vehicle, I have to report that emissions profile, as well as use of product. So when our products are in the vehicle and out on the road, I have to report on those emissions as well. So both of those data sets come from the OEM.
Did that surprise you, Jamie, like it surprised me?
You know, it does somewhat because of the power dynamic, but honestly, suppliers have a lot of power over their customers, automaker customers, and they have a lot of insights. So it does make a lot of sense that they would be keeping tabs on the performance and behavior and holding automakers' feet to the fire.
Yeah. And you also talked with Ahmed and Paul a little bit when we had this conversation about what happens now. You know, what we saw was really interesting, but it does beg the question, where do they go from here?
Right, yeah. And you mentioned earlier that some of the steps are kind of small. And, you know, it was interesting. It was great to see all the people pitching in, but it kind of felt like they've harvested a lot of the low-hanging fruit, made a lot of changes with things that, you know, pay for themselves in 1 year. You know, like you'd spend 1 hour, you know, $50 worth of labor to, you know, seal up a leak, it can save $50 in just 1 year. Now they're getting, Paul explained, you know, now they're getting to the point where they need to invest in some equipment. They need to spend $1,000, $10,000, you know, multiple, much bigger spending investments, and you know, they're going to need support from their parent company. And there's going to take more than a year to get the payback from those. So it's definitely moving into a more challenging stage as we try to really make a difference.
Before we end our look at suppliers for today, I do want to give another big shout out to Lindsay Chappell, who you just heard, John Irwin, Hans Greimel, Audrey LaForest, and the whole team that participated in a really great series of reports on what is happening in the supplier community with carbon neutrality. Again, you can find that series called Carbon is the Enemy at autonews.com. And just one more note about something Lindsay mentioned, traditional suppliers being really just one part of this changing supply landscape. Companies that supply energy to auto manufacturers are also some of the most significant players in this transition. And that's what we'll tackle in the next episode of Driving to Zero, the role of utilities in the roadmap to carbon neutrality.
Car companies now want to know where their energy is coming from, and they don't want coal energy. You know, if I'm going to build an electric car factory, I don't want it made possible by somebody putting soot in the air 100 miles away.
Driving to Zero is a podcast from Automotive News. Original music and sound design by Sam Bobian. Video and photos for our website by Jack Hallauer, who traveled with us to Brampton. We got additional help from Kellen Walker. Big shout outs to the folks at Magna International and our own Lindsay Chappell for their help and insights. I'm Jake Neer.
And I'm Jamie Butters.
We'd really love it if you gave us a like, review, and subscribe to make sure you catch the next episode of Driving to Zero.